Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. This is Susan Dobie Chase, and today my guest is the fabulous Mr. Rick McIntyre. Hello, Rick. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I noticed that you've been kind of busy lately with some Edgar Allan Poe. Tell us about what's going on.
Well, it's an honors project I talked myself into doing at the school that I'm going to, in 19th Century American Lit class. It's going to be kind of a short story that it merges a bunch of different Edgar Allan Poe stories and characters into hopefully a cohesive kind of whole. I should say right up front that I'm kind of lifting the idea from the writer Christopher Moore, who has written some really amazing books, including Serpent of Venice, which combines an Edgar Allan Poe story, Merchant of Venice, and Othello into this, and then, you know, a couple other characters and storylines that were original, but it's an amazing piece of work.
Well, excellent. I think that sounds like a really interesting project.
The downside is you have to read a lot of Poe.
Yeah.
And great ideas.
The writing style was so much different back then.
Yeah, it's very, very wordy, and even then Poe, you know, went for it. And he's really in love with how smart he is. He likes to drop Latin and French phrases without translating them and make reference to classical works and everything, just to remind us that Poe knew.
Right. An interesting fellow, though. I mean, given his life and all that he went through, all that he put himself through, it just, you know, reminds me of the whole tortured artist idea, because he truly was one.
Yeah, he's also kind of an alcoholic warning story, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Good example of what untreated addiction leads to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I know it's not easy to face addiction. So I think that you're right. It's kind of a cautionary tale in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I hear that you're touring a bit in the near future.
Yeah, I have a new book coming out on Broken Head Press called The Man at the Door. And I'm going to be doing a show down on Staten Island on the evening of the 20th, and then something in Manhattan on the 22nd. If you go to my The Rick Facebook page, I've shared the post there, or will hurriedly check to see if I did and do today. I really suck at marketing.
The Rick is spelled with a Y instead of an I-C-K. It's R-Y-K.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, to start us out, Rick, if you wouldn't mind reading something for us.
Sure. This is from the upcoming book, Dating as Salmon is Too. Facing dating in my 50s, I posted a profile on OkCupid. I know it's pure lottery, but I also know a lot of long-term solid couples that met this way. So having exhausted their jokes about how I'm so old I should try a carbon dating website, my friends tell me it's all in how you massage the algorithms, which I am told means answer a lot of questions. So I'm ready for the personal questions, but the first one seems more astronomy. Which is bigger, asks OkCupid, the sun or the earth? And then it asks me what I'd want my perfect match to answer, and then rate it on a scale of a little, somewhat, or very. So I answer the sun, and indicate I'd also want my perfect match to answer the sun. Stress that it is very in its importance, explaining in the comments that I need to know you come from the same solar system as me. Long-distance relationships suck. So satisfied I'm being as specific as possible, I go to the next question. When it comes to your pubic hair, do you make any effort to maintain its appearance? Well, I've stopped picking out the gray ones. Does that count? I don't know how or if my perfect match would answer that question. Imagine it'd be just like, what passion noises would they make? Things I would discover if a match is found, a connection made, the first date gone so well they asked me to drop them off, circle the block, and ask them on a second date. Only this time they say, park the cars, lose the keys. And this fantasy is interrupted by OkCupid asking me to describe myself vis-a-vis the life cycle of the North Atlantic salmon. The metaphors here are not subtle. A, fry or youth. B, sprat, young adult. C, adult, out swimming with the fishes. And D, spawned, has kids, slash, dead. Dead. My whole life in online dating is the sad coda to a nature documentary. But here is where my perfect match would say, shh, sushi. Now please turn off that damn computer and let's do some eating. And I would mumble glad praise to algorithm and join them.
Lovely. Autobiographical, yes?
Yeah, I briefly tried OkCupid, except it's just kind of insane. And I was answering questions, and all of those questions actually come from OkCupid. So I think my optimism plummeted when, you know, I saw that, you know, one of the questions was, which was bigger than the sun or the earth? I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do you have any luck?
Not really, no. But then I haven't really tried. I am finally at a point in my life where being alone or not part of a couple is not scaring the ever-living shit out of me. So, and, you know, and with school and with other things I'm involved in, I'm just a little busy to spend a lot of time looking. If something comes along, great, you know. You know, if Selma Hayek finally calls me, that would be great. But, you know, until that day, I'm going to, you know, stay busy. I don't know what that
Tell
French billionaire can give her that I can't.
True enough. I'm sure that that's true.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your book. What's the concept? Where did it come from?
Well, the
when
concept
out?
Is I had talked to Jeff Taylor, who's the editor at Broken Head Press, about I was kind of interested in doing a book that would sort of gather together, you know, the greatest hits, as it were, from chapbooks over the last 4 or 5 years, and along with some newer pieces. And that's basically the concept behind it. So it's really so I don't have to keep a lot of little chapbooks in print and present some newer work, which I really am proud of, for one. I would read the title track, as it were, but it's a little bit too long for the show. And but it's kind of funny in that I wrote it just as a kind of exercise in writing something like Ray Bradbury might do. And it was one of those examples of where you write something and you show it to other people, and to a great extent, a lot of them find a meaning in it that I had never intended when I was writing, at least consciously.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, not to give too much away, but it's I wanted it to be sort of like, you know, the devil comes to your door.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were reading it going, I really like how you worked all that stuff in about addiction in there. And I'm like, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I mean,
wow.
I read it again and I'm like, wow, I can really see it. But like I say, it was not in my head when I was writing it.
That's amazing because, you know, like I remember sitting in my high school English classes thinking to myself, is this teacher just making this stuff up? I mean, did the author really intend for it to be like this? And I guess the answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that about half the writers never intended any Christ symbols and just English teachers.
Right.
You know, for some reason, have to define the Christ symbol.
Right. Because I'll tell you, when I sit down to write something, it's basically, I don't know, the things that are on my mind come right out. And then, you know, like I don't go back and think about deep imagery for the most part. I mean, I think about creating like a metaphor or an image or something, but I...
Mm-hmm.
It's just so convoluted sometimes, I guess, is what I'm looking to say about all that we read into the work of famous authors, going back, let's say, to Poe. Are you there?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm just imagining going back to Poe and shuddering.
That's okay.
Do we have to right now?
No, I didn't mean that we had to. I meant just referencing back to what you had been saying.
Yeah.
So you've got some touring going on, you said, in New York. Is that where you're going to be next?
Yeah, it's the one show is on Staten Island at the Slam that Thomas of Galaro runs. And
okay.
God, I should really have these details down a little bit better, shouldn't I? This is why I'm really no good at marketing. You're doing the reading. Yes, somewhere. I'll have that stuff up on my author page later today.
Okay, so it's the Rick RYK.
I'm not finding it immediately. And so, yeah, the Rick.
Well, that's okay.
THERYK on Facebook.
Very good, very good. And then there's something in Manhattan as well?
Yes. Again, a reading that Thomas put together. It's me and two other poets. It's a Sunday afternoon kind of thing. So different kind of vibe than reading at night. But, I'm excited to be reading in New York. I don't get down there a lot. And, it's only been recently that my life has kind of come around to where I can be traveling and focusing on the readings and the like.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a lot of good stuff is coming for you. When is your book coming out?
Later this month, ish.
Okay.
Standard time.
Okay.
So I wish I had a definite date. Don't quite yet.
Okay. And when it does come out, where can we get it?
I will be advertising it on Facebook on that page. I also have a blogger, The Years Are the Hardest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a Patreon page as well.
Well, wow. You have a lot of
name of Rick McIntyre. Yeah. Again, I'm trying to learn this marketing, crowdsourcing, putting your name and what you're doing out there, before... not talking about, I did a great reading last night at such and such. if I can get that information out a week before the event, people could be there.
Right.
So,
right.
This is a new thing I'm exploring. Communication.
Yeah, communication. So we're about halfway through. You want to read us a second piece?
Sure. This is called Four Ideas and a Plan. 'Tis gone and left no forwarding address, that's a red flag. When the weather seemed to know how to live under my skin, it was time to move ahead with the plan. I know what it is I'm going to do. I don't have a single clue why. but it's time to make a move. I've established that. I said just that just now, out loud. I was listening. That's how you learn things. You listen for the words people say and the ones they don't. You check yourself for weather and write things down on paper. They can't scan for paper, can't diagnose it or hack into it. Paper is invisible unless you're holding it or looking at it. I don't know if it counts if you only remember it. I don't remember everything. That's why I write things down. I had four ideas. I wrote them down on paper. I hid the paper in the envelope in a box. I didn't hide the box. I don't usually hide things. I'm not a puzzle to be solved. I wrecked my therapist's office to make this point. My skin is weathered. Anyway, he's gone now, and the sky says, move. I didn't hide the box with the ideas. I left it in a library on a shelf in the basement where they keep the books about the way things work on paper. I wrote four ideas down on paper. Whoever finds it finds what is inside. They will have to decide to open the envelope, decide to read the paper with the ideas. I hope they can feel the weather. The four ideas are about the ways we try to solve each other. They could be used to fix everything or to make bad weather. I left them in an envelope. Now someone will find them and then decide what kind of seed they are.
Beautiful.
So I like to write a lot of persona poems. I like to get inside of other people's or other creatures' heads, depending on the poem. I've always wondered, like, you know, there's a line past which my crazy has never taken me. But I've always wondered what it would be like to, you know, say, be a paranoid conspiracy theorist or, you know, the like. And I got started, you know, thinking about paper as opposed to things that we access online. And the poem just kind of happened from that.
Yeah. Things are tangible. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just saying a lot of the poems in the book, people in crisis, people dealing with similar things. Like there's a Frankenstein poem, which is pretty much about what happens when a father rejects their children. And how in, you know, if you read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, there's a lot going on in that movie that's blamed on the monster, but it's really the forces around him, the people that look at him and scream monster, you know, the father that rejects him, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I always kind of go for the underdog.
and I think that's really a beautiful thing about your work is that underdog-ness. Now, going back to the idea of persona, what draws you to that kind of technique?
I think it's getting a chance to look at the world through a different perspective than you might normally pick yourself. I also think there's a freedom in persona poems to explore, you know, negative emotions, negative feelings without, while also keeping them at the same time at a distance. I find a lot of my poems end up allegorical. Over social or political issues, and it's not intentional except to the extent that I don't, every time I've tried to write something directly political, it just sounds like, you know, Bono tried to write poetry one day, and it's awful. I don't do it well. Some people do it, you know, phenomenally well, and but I find a lot in the slam culture that persona poems are sometimes a hard sell.
Why do you think that is?
In slam, there's a, I've noticed a general assumption that all poems are self-confessional.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially in the context of 3 minutes, 10 seconds, it's hard to establish in the poem that it's not you speaking, it's something, someone else. And if you lose the audience in the slam for 5 seconds, you've lost them, you know.
Yes.
And you have to spend the entire rest of the poem trying to get them back. And some people just don't listen that clearly.
Yes.
You know, I've done persona poems and then have people say, like, how can you believe something that screwed up? Like, you know, I thought from the brief introduction of this poem is from the point of view of blah, 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 that it might have suggested this was not, you know, not me. but, you know, in fiction writing, it's becoming kind of increasingly hard to explore I want to be real careful how I state this. Negative aspects of oneself are a hard sell. You know, it's easier to be angry about something or angry for the benefit of fill in the blank than it is to write a poem about how, you know, you have screwed up thoughts. There's just a tendency to take poems as a somewhat of a statement of core values of the person doing it. You know, like if somebody went up to Anthony Hopkins and said, I just don't understand how you can, you know, eat people. And, you know, they have to explain to him that, no, this is Anthony Hopkins, the actor. The character he was playing was Hannibal Lecter. He himself is not a serial killer, not in favor of serial killers, you know, doesn't secretly wish to be, you know, I mean.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the whole role of writing drama, writing for the theater, and how that has a lot to, you know, a lot of interchangeable aspects with what you do when you do write persona poems. Certainly it's a smaller snapshot of a moment in time than writing a longer dramatic work. However, you know, what you're doing is more like, perhaps, the job of the playwright than the novelist.
I enjoy doing features more than I enjoy slamming. In slamming, there's just not the space to, you know, relax a little bit, take your time to get around to a point or a statement. You know, you got 3 minutes, 10 seconds. And not that this is a 100% true statement, but by and large, slam culture has more youth culture to it than culture of older people. There are people, there's not a lot of people actively slamming who are over 40. And, you know, I'm not going to come out and say slam is a young person's game. I actually am, in fact, in favor of the way slam has given entire sections of this society we live in a voice where they never had one before. And if that means, you know, old white guys like me need to step aside and give them the spotlight, then, you know, that's not such a terrible thing.
Right. Interesting perspective. But still, you know, to keep your work alive and you know, writing is such a passion. And I can't imagine knowing you without writing as part of your life. I'm glad that there are people who hang in there and are, you know, continuing to work with the art form that aren't, you know, and I don't mean anything against very young poets by saying this, but sometimes the maturity of a voice that comes from a person who who isn't in college or just out of college gives
mm-hmm.
a different kind of resonance, not necessarily a better kind of resonance, but the
Yeah, just different.
experience of the writer shows through, and somehow it's like listening to something that was said with wisdom. Yeah, so help me out
Yeah,
there.
I
I'm
mean,
kind of
there
flailing
is that
around. You
wisdom
know what I
of,
mean, though, right?
oh, yeah, the wisdom of age and experience. You know, not to say that the youth are not wise. They have,
Exactly.
you know, their own knowledge and their own truths. But, you know, when they, I've always summed it up sort of like this when I was speaking with someone who was, you know, 25, and the difference between us was that I have some idea what it's like to be 25. This person has no idea what it's like personally to be in their 50s. And it's
Yes.
not a value statement, it's just a thing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so
yeah.
I got one more poem to do.
You want to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to do that. this is a poem that also from the book, and this is another persona poem. But I was thinking about, you know, legendary creatures, you know, like Bigfoot and the, you know, Loch Ness Monster, and it got me to thinking about El Chupacabra.
Mm.
If some people know, is the kind of dog-like thing that's sometimes spotted in the American Southwest, Mexico, and I believe Puerto Rico. And in fact, the name El Chupacabra, the goat sucker, comes from a Puerto Rican comedian. But anyway, this is the love song of El Chupacabra. The problem with being alien is in the translation. Nothing is easy to explain. In my world, the night sky is green and feisty, the sea is a living creature, and blood is a heavy thing. What you call the howling of lost things, we call the music of the spheres. And I've heard Ruard Landgaard's music of the spheres, and it's lovely, a good thing. I'd describe it as panted hapo, but you wouldn't understand that phrase means heavenly. The trouble is in translation from one plane of existence to another. Your world is especially cramped into three small directions. The look on your faces say many of you like it that way. Creatures like me don't fit into narrow frames of being. It remakes us as bent and reviled things that shun light and discovery. That's why our origins are traced to empty places in the night, why no two stories match, why every bad thing that happens in these places is always blamed on us. We are natural targets for misunderstanding. We are buried under mudslides of sneer and disbelief. You have a huge world, and we are lost in every phantom one of us. How we got here are stories of infinite variety and unprovable theories. Our reality is this: we are here, but we want to leave. We are stranded in mud and graveyards, in tangled jungles, in deep Loch Ness, in search of elusive bridges home. Sometimes this is cruelly interrupted when we fall in love with one of you, so real in the moonlight we mistake you for angels. We monsters are searching, hungry for the same thing as any solid creature, a place to live free and someone to share it with. That's all our alien agenda is. We are like you. But when lurid superstitions and accusations come to light, I become a target for insults and cruelty. I was labeled goat sucker by a comedian, and your world laughs and laughs and laughs and runs to pick up guns and shoot. You are practiced in this, schooled since birth, many of you. And I wonder why hate must be as pan-dimensional as hearts. How could love be monstrous? Let us separate truth from all the mistranslations. The killings blamed on me were mundane animals or poachers. This is a vital truth so many humans fail to understand. If you love something, you don't bleed it dry. And on the day I leave your world behind, I will dance with my love, so angelic in the moonlight, I will know she is real. We will spin to make ourselves weightless, ready to see, receive joy. The bridge back to my world is a delicate thing. Better we float. Better we float. Once we are in my homeland dimension of infinite variety, we won't need for anything. Our ecstatic hearts will pump with pants head huppo, and we will howl to the stars, singing of a place where love is never called monster.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Rick McIntyre. Next week, Spoken Heard will be back with Phaedra Sheridan as our guest. And until then...
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick, for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Be kind to one another.